Hell Set.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
Ooh, John David. How you doing today?
You know you like it, yeah. John David is
I'm John David. I'm John David. Who's the imposter for John David? Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, man. Of course, I'm the one with little tiny kids now, and you know, years ago when we were getting this thing off the ground, you were the ones with little tiny kids, and you know, you'd always come, you know, dragging your feet to the microphone on, you know, Tuesday mornings or whenever it was, and you know, sounded like death because they, you know, contracted something at daycare and then brought it home for mommy and daddy to share, and I always didn't really have a lot of pity for you, and now it's, well, it's just comeuppance, you know, it's that crow pie.
Oh man, come on. I mean, that's true. There's been a lot about you becoming a dad that I'm just like, you know what? I'm gonna be magnanimous. I'm not gonna pinpoint like you're like you never realized, and now you get it.
No,
now you
true.
Understand. No man, I get it. It's you don't get that. You know, like that's the thing. It's like no. It's fine because you don't hold it over the head of a father who's going through it.
You wait until they're kind of through it and then you rub their nose in it. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, you
exactly.
know, we have friends that, you know, or, you know, don't necessarily send their kids to daycare or whatever. And I just feel like they're missing out. You know, it's there's something.
Well, their immune systems are
awful. I mean, the next time COVID comes around, we're good. Like we're, you know, I don't have to worry about it. Anyway, this is really something. So all that to say, man, yeah, not feeling too great. Got some kind of witchcraft from my daughter that, you know, got it at daycare and just trying to make it through. Yeah, not been smoking my pipe for the past couple of days, as you can imagine, and trying to, you know, drink a lot of good liquids, you know, just water and
that hot tea
and you know, eating decent food, taking a lot of naps, and there has been the occasional dram of whiskey along the way, but yeah, man, we're just floating along.
Man, I think I've shared this on the show, but I'll never forget when I was in D.C. I was in D.C. doing a live show for a different show, and I was sick as a dog.
Yeah.
But I was meeting up with actually a Country Squire Radio listener, and, you know, we were hanging out, having breakfast, and I mean, like, my voice was just, I mean, like, it was like
bad.
Gravelly, yeah. Just like barely hanging on by a thread. It was awful. And I remember because we were sitting there, we were talking. And, you know, I was, you know, sharing some, you know, as I occasionally do whenever meeting people in person, I like to share kind of some behind the scenes stuff that we might not mention on the show and kind of some of the old stories, you know, from the barracks,
right,
and whatnot,
right.
and all that kind of good stuff. And somebody else walks by. It's like, hey, are you talking about Country Squire Radio? I love that show. And I was like, which was great. And I was like, oh, really? I'm Bo York from Country Squire Radio.
I remember you sharing that on air, man. Yeah, that's hilarious.
Right.
And they were like, no, but really, like.
But really, yeah. And they're like, no, it's really me. Like,
that is
of course,
funny.
I didn't sell it myself.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, man, that's a small world. But yeah, you could. It was hard to get away with that one at that point in time. So.
Yes, sir.
That's
well, man,
great.
I'm glad that you're here. I know that it's a rough one, but we've got a fun topic to talk about this week and a lot of good stuff going on. And yeah, hope you get to feeling better. As you say, the honey, the tea, the honey, little spot of whiskey, throw some orange juice in the mix from time to time.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
You know, my palate and my voice, it's my moneymaker, man. I got to get it all back in.
That's true.
Back in shape here. So I got to be able to taste those tobaccos and talk about them on Country Squire Radio and everything else. So we'll get back in the saddle soon.
All right, man. Sounds good. What else is going on, man? I know you've been kind of away from the shop, obviously, to kind of rest up, but y'all got anything fun going on? Everything going well?
Well, we did just release a new tobacco, and it's Turkish Delight, and something that we are excited about. It's actually the last blend from our now departing shipping and customer service coordinator, Liz First. Liz, if you've ordered from the shop and called in before, she oftentimes has been the person who's kind of quarterbacked your mail order and maybe handled any issues that you had and that kind of thing. And a blender in her own right and someone that knows her way around the tobacco, you know, kitchen, she has left us with one final treat, and this is Turkish Delight. And so it's a very Turkish Izmir forward blend that we think you'll enjoy. And so if it's something you're looking for, a cool smoking fragrant non-aromatic summertime smoke that is kind to your mouth. I think you'll really like it. So it's funny. We came out with it yesterday, and it immediately sold out. and so right, we're waiting for more more blending ingredients to come in. But once we, you know, it will be a fixture on our shelves for the foreseeable future. So just give us a couple weeks to get the kinks worked out, and until then, you can kind of just let the anticipation build. So pretty exciting, and we've also got a sale going on select aromatic tobaccos for the summertime. So some of our more fruity and signature aromatic blends that are good for hot weather, we've got a nice 15% sale on that at the shop as well. One thing I want to mention, after we had our Squire Select episode, I guess it's been a couple weeks ago now.
Yeah, but, it's been a couple weeks now, yeah.
The Bumbu, man, we've gotten some some feedback, and matter of fact, we had a couple of folks stop by the shop immediately after they listened to the episode, and they were like, "Where's the leftover Bumbu? I want to try the Bumbu. Where's the Bumbu?" And
right?
They knew I didn't drink it all because they knew they could read between the lines that I thought it was nasty.
Right, yeah. You hated it.
And matter of fact, even the Hurricane came by the shop. And there was, of course.
What do you think? I would imagine.
Well, I didn't have any to give him. That's the thing. It was actually down the street at the annex at the time, and so I didn't have it with me. But he was highly disappointed, which you could imagine. But yeah. Anyway, it was good. It was good feedback on that. I'd be interested to know what other folks thought of Bumbu if you haven't tried that banana Laffy Taffy rum favorite. So.
Don't say Laffy Taffy. I mean, like, I get it, but like, that's the one. Like, that critique is it's the one. It's fair, but I don't like it.
So don't bring it up. Like,
right. Well, it's one of those things where like that was such a fun one to do.
It was fun.
And that one in particular, because it was just like, I was the same way. I was like, I don't think I like this, but I'm so perplexed by it.
I have to keep drinking it, obviously.
I gotta keep drinking it. So yeah, that was a fun one, man. I'm glad we got some good feedback off that. Well, hopefully, man, we'll get some good feedback off of this episode too. We are reopening a series as we are wont to do from time to time here, talking about our Heroes of the Bowl. Now, one of the great things about the Heroes of the Bowl series, it's a chance for us to take a look back on some of the famous pipe smokers of history and on occasion fiction.
Yeah.
This week we are going pure history, though, although someone who has made their artistic contributions to the art community, of course, but also kind of to Americana, mm-hmm. a man who painted a generation, who painted a vision of America throughout several decades, and someone who did so with a pipe in hand. And is, man, you want to talk about famous pipe smokers. There are few more famous out there than Norman Rockwell.
Yeah, yeah. Norman Rockwell, man. I mean, you just encapsulate Americana in a personality and in an image. And of course, his collected works have since, you know, he's been deceased, gone for, you know, tens of millions of dollars, even for small sketch paintings and things of that nature. So just an iconic American person and artist, illustrator, but certainly in the pipe smoking Hall of Fame, right? I mean, someone that you know is amongst our most famous partakers of the leaf. And man, it's someone we've mentioned before, you know, occasionally on the show, but never dived into, you know, a dedicated episode. So we thought we'd do that today.
Man, okay, so I'm kind of curious, when you think of Norman Rockwell, what are some of the images or what are some of the thoughts that first come to mind?
When I think of Norman Rockwell, I immediately think of that iconic Thanksgiving dinner table, mm-hmm. with the little 1950s mama holding the platter with the turkey on it over the table. Like that's the immediate thought that I have in my mind. Like, it's just you know, you think of the holidays, you think of Santa Claus, you think of, you know, carving turkeys and all these classic American themes, and that's what comes to my mind. Yeah. What about
yeah,
you?
Yeah, man. I mean, like, I think you nailed it. It's holidays for me too. Like, it's I think it's impossible, even so many years later, and with so many different kind of you know, art movements and art stylings that have come, gone, and also been kind of iconic in their own right. It is hard to separate Norman Rockwell from, you know, Christmas, Thanksgiving, holiday cards, and just that
yeah.
general historic or maybe idealized, almost fictionalized look back at American history through that lens of Leave It to Beaver-esque Christmas, you know, like that kind yeah. of feel. And I mean, you mentioned something that I was looking forward to talking about too, which is is that, you know, not only is Norman Rockwell a famous pipe smoker, he came to really kind of help bring a, I think, a vision of another famous pipe smoker into the public consciousness, which is, of course, St. Nicholas. Now, Nicholas was obviously drawn and painted with a pipe far, far before Norman Rockwell got his hands on him. But at the same time, if you're thinking Santa Claus right now, chances are the vision that comes to mind, if it's not Norman Rockwell Santa Claus, it's heavily inspired by
him. Either inspired by him or somehow related to that that imagery, which is really impressive. So, Norman Rockwell, born in 1894. We're talking about someone that kind of on the cusp of that Edwardian age was coming to awareness, and a painter and illustrator, someone that best known for his work at the Saturday Evening Post, but had such a varied life and career. And we mentioned has those images that conjure up Americana classical themes and all the holidays, of course. And even then became an illustrator that reached the point of commission to draw presidents and celebrities and all these very important things, and even some civil rights work, which we'll talk about later. But really just an impressive person and someone that was highly talented. Born in New York City, the Rockwell family was actually a very early immigrant family from England, even before the nation was founded, hailing back to 1635. And so just a long blue blood family of Yankees that had been here for quite a while. At age 14, he entered art school, was where his early career began. And at this age, he began to be associated with artwork from the Boy Scouts, actually, which is something that he was closely identified with his whole life. The Boy Scouts, outdoor living, trail life, and getting into the environment and the outdoor, you know, world, that was just all very much a part of his the kind of shtick or whatever. He loved that. First major job was actually as a staff artist for Boy's Life magazine. He did that at age 19. He became the art editor for Boy's Life at 19. Boy's Life is the publication, the official publication of the Boy Scouts of America, and actually is still in print today and is affiliated with the BSA. So kind of neat. He eventually moved and began sharing studio space with a famous cartoonist at the time called Clyde Forsyth, who happened to do some work at the Saturday Evening Post. Saturday Evening Post, you know, that's not a name. When we think of Norman Rockwell, we think of that name, but that's not a name particularly familiar with, you know, today's readers, right? We don't have the Saturday Evening Post still exists in a kind of shadow iteration of what it used to be. But this was, at the time, really for the first half of the 20th century, was one of the most prolific and respected publications for just middle class American families, right? It's something that you got in the mail a couple times a week, and had engaging articles, artwork, reviews, just housekeeping things. I mean, it was just a great variety magazine that was, you know, prolific and had editorial and current events, and was just very well known. And after the 60s and 70s went through several different kind of evolutions, and now is very different from the one that we would think of back then. But yeah, Saturday Evening Post is something that really the timelessness of that name in some sense is tied to Norman Rockwell because of his all his famed work there. And so he submitted his first cover picture for the magazine in 1916 at only age 21. And he would go on after that to publish 323 covers thereafter for the next 47 years. So, you know, just imagine that. I mean, wow. You know, again, this is a magazine that we're not super familiar with today because it's not still, it carries the same weight and all that. But imagine that you're someone that, you know, grew up in the late 50s or 60s. You come of age, and then at a relatively early age, you start submitting work, you know, photographs to, let's say, Time Magazine, right? So, you know, Time Magazine, right, or something we, you know, think of as at that level today. And then over the next 47 years, Time Magazine picks your artwork to go on the front cover 323 times. I mean, it's that kind of, I'm just telling you, like, it is, it is incredible the amount of identity that Rockwell, you know, possessed associated with that publication, and you know, something that really isn't paralleled today. I mean, you could think of certainly, you know, Time or the Atlantic or, you know, the New Yorker, any of these guys, they're not going to, you know, select the same photographer, right, to do the artwork on their cover for that many concurrent, you know, editions. So pretty interesting.
Right.
During World War II, Rockwell's art provided solidarity for a nation at war. And in Franklin Delano Roosevelt, 1941, his inauguration speech famously called for four freedoms, which Rockwell went on to illustrate. Mm. The freedom from want, freedom of speech, freedom of worship, and freedom from fear. I was not particularly familiar with this. I'd kind of, you know, seen some images of these before, but had to go back and remind myself. These are really moving concepts, obviously, that the president at the time put forth. But in Roosevelt's mind, these are things that any human shouldn't live without, you know, a freedom from want, a freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom from fear. And then during this, you know, incredibly tumultuous time and the nation pulling together and all these, you know, tortuous events across the world, Rockwell undertakes to illustrate these things and does so with just incredible skill. U.S. government actually eventually did a tour of these original paintings across the United States to raise money for war bonds to help pay for the war, which is pretty... pretty awesome. Imagine like today's government, you know, to pay for some event that, you know, the government's undertaking, you know, talking to, you know, movie producers or something and saying, hey, we'd like to take your movie on the road and sell tickets to it and use the proceeds to, you know, pay for, you know, this war. You think that would happen today? So it's kind of...
Well, it depends. If it was Captain America, did you ever see Captain America?
Of course not. No.
Oh, no, he does. He'd like, that's the thing. He gets started in the movie. He's out selling war bonds.
Yeah.
They ship him around and he does a little play where he punches Adolf Hitler, you know, 100 times. And it's great. You know, who is the man? I can't remember it, but I just know the Star Spangled Man with the plan.
Oh, man. Someone's glass shattered somewhere. So, you know, just had this incredibly skillful representation of these four freedoms and of want, having plenty on your plate, of freedom of speech, you know, having the ability to speak out in public, and of worship, to obviously worship the way that that you're called to from your convictions, and then from fear, just living without the veil of treachery kind of over you. His favorite of all these paintings, which was so moving, was the freedom of speech one. Rockwell particularly liked this. It features a man in a plaid shirt who's jacketed, and he is standing up in what looks like a public assembly to make himself heard. And it's just this very simple but very moving picture of a kind of every man American standing in what looks like, you know, could be any small town hall or you know, city hall or civic center, and he's about to, you know, say something that is important to him. And this is probably someone that's not used to giving public speeches or anything like that. And so it's it kind of creates a sense of nervousness on his part. And it's just a beautiful picture. It really is. And that was Rockwell's favorite.
You know, in that picture in particular, Rockwell said that it was inspired by an event of his life where he went to a town hall meeting and there was a man that stood up with kind of a very similar stance and that sort of thing, and just said, you know, made his opinions heard. And he said, and literally no one in the room agreed with him, but they all gave him the space to share those thoughts,
great?
And everything. And it just really, you know, even though he didn't agree with the man, he really, you know, valued the fact that he was given the space to be able to,
right,
to speak his beliefs. And I think there's a lot going on. Obviously, also as an artist, freedom of speech is one that I think speaks to all artists as well. But man, all of those, it's you know, Norman Rockwell was very much a patriot. His weapon was his paintbrush, but at the same time, he did actually, if I'm not mistaken, try to go off and join the army, but was a little too lanky at the time, if I'm remembering correctly.
This was really interesting story about him. Yeah, actually, during World War One, you know, this is someone that, you know, as a young man was incredibly patriotic and caught up in America's late entrance into the Great War and wanted to do his part. And it's just crazy. He was, for his height, he was over 6 feet tall. He weighed he was 8 pounds underweight. For his height ratio. And so they actually would not let him enlist to fight in World War One. And so this crazy story develops that we have confirmation on. It's incredibly true. But in one night, Norman Rockwell, as a youth, he ate enough bananas, donuts, and drank liquid to enlist the very next day in the Army. And what was so disappointing to him is that he, you know, he got in, he'd done this, all this terrible overnight work, and I'm assuming trying, you know, really hard to not go to the bathroom to evacuate and everything. It's just crazy. Like, what are you willing to go through to serve your country? Well, Norman Rockwell ate way too many bananas and donuts, but he wanted to go into the field, you know, and it was funny, disappointingly to him, he was only given the role of military artist and never saw action in the line of duty. But I do think that little anecdote, that story speaks a lot to his character, a lot to his love for the United States. And, you know, and certainly, as you mentioned, that, you know, that as an artist is very tied up in the identity of those right-brained people. So, yeah, it makes good sense. In Rockwell's younger years, he struggled emotionally and you know, with insecurity and even depression, which, you know, at the time was not something you regularly talked of. You know, he had the luxury coming from kind of his background to going and finding a psychoanalyst to kind of help him with some of these things. And it was at that point the psychoanalyst, he chided him for, quote, painting his happiness but not living it. Mm. And so we have these really vivid, beautiful pictures of American life and, you know, kind of this sereneness and just this classic, you know, working together, everyone's happy, the family's happy, the plates are full at dinner time and all this stuff. And yet there was a sadness behind a lot of that. You know, Rockwell was divorced at a young age and went through a real serious season of darkness. His second wife died. Even after they moved to be closer to some, you know, some hospital care for her and take some precautions for her. And so, you know, he was just very, in some ways, kind of tortured, you know, and had to work through a lot of that. So the front image of the things that he saw that he was so good at painting and illustrating, you know, was not necessarily something that he experienced in his own right, which is kind of interesting. It's like, well, are you painting something that you're longing for? Are you drawing something that you're longing for? And maybe for Rockwell, that was somewhat the case.
Even the way in which he portrayed the war in his artwork was always very, there was a sense of humor to it. There was a sense of celebration. There's kind of a sense of innocence even in the soldiers' eyes. And, you know, and but was really, you know, and I wrestled with this because I was thinking about, like, you know, the way in which he depicted the war. And, you know, there is that, I mean, you know, it was used as propaganda. And I mean that in a neutral term, not in any kind of negative or positive light. Sure. Just that's what it was used for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reality is that he was very adamant about the fact that he didn't want to paint what he felt was angry or ugly, like, at the time. Like, he really wanted to, like kind of latch on to the American spirit back home that was striving for something, was striving kind of for those ideals and not necessarily touch on the horrors of war, not to pretend like the horrors of war don't exist, but at least in the world that he painted, the horrors of war didn't exist. And so there is potentially a critique as kind of looking back on, you know, him engaging with his own psyche or being afraid to engage with his own psyche to some extent, especially during that time. You can kind of see it in the way in which he kind of portrayed America as well.
No, I think you're right. You know, living in small town America, Arlington, Vermont, and then Stockbridge, Massachusetts, this is, you know, where he was kind of getting a lot of his content. I mean, you know, just the, you know, folks going to church, eating at the local diner, kids sledding in the snow, building snowmen, you know, a lot of this kind of country life and just, you know, the simplicity of this and contrasting that to the horrors of, you know, what's either going on in the big city or in Washington, D.C. or overseas during wartime, just terrible. And so, you know, just bringing that sense of lightheartedness and low gravity to those, you know, those situations and events of the day is kind of what he did. You know, that's what he was known for. And it cuts both ways. You know, sure, there's a beauty in that. There's a, you know, kind of remembering about the, you know, hey, life's carrying on and we've got to make the best of everything. But there is also that sense of like kind of skimming over some of the darkness, some of the reality that's there that, you know, one of the, you know, most well-known artists of the age, maybe doesn't engage with fully. And so, yeah, just kind of interesting. So his legacy, you know, the stodgy artist types of today classify Rockwell as a cartoonist or an illustrator, rather than a painter. And, you know, that kind of, as someone that wants to take up for my fellow pipe smoker, that kind of gets under my skin, right? It's like, no, I mean, this was a real artist, but honestly, I don't think it wouldn't, I think it would not have bothered Rockwell particularly much, you know, to think of himself as an illustrator. That's really what he referred to himself as. You know, maybe cartoonist might have been pushing it, but you know, but an illustrator, this is kind of how he thought of himself and introduced himself. And you know, so I don't necessarily think that would be a slight in his mind. Many works he became well known for over the years. We mentioned the Four Freedoms earlier, Santa and Scouts in Snow. You've got this you know, picture of Santa with these Boy Scouts that are out there kind of wrestling in the snow. His rendition of Rosie the Riveter. Rosie the Riveter, as we know, was this kind of iconic American woman figure, stylized during World War II, of women working in their part for the kind of war preparation. My grandmother was actually one of these people, these, you know, ladies that were going to work. Yeah, they weren't fighting overseas, but they were doing their part behind the scenes. And the most famous image of this, of course, was done by Howard Miller, the famous We Can Do It picture, where Rosie the Riveter is kind of holding up her bicep and flexing her muscle and looking right at the painter and just saying, hey, we got this, you know. And Rockwell's rendition of this is really cool. And I would highly recommend that anybody go look at this. It's not nearly as well known as the Miller We Can Do It painting, but Rockwell's rendition is equally cool. It's just such a neat image. It's a rendition of a muscular woman. She's on her lunch break. She's got her riveter kind of draped across her lap as she's sitting down. And this pose is that she almost has this Rubensian kind of heaviness to her that Rockwell was portraying, but he actually modeled it after a Michelangelo painting from the 1500s. So this pose is actually kind of capturing that, and it's just really beautiful. It's just really neat. It's taking Rosie the Riveter and turning her into this, I don't know, it's just almost mythic figure. It's really, really something.
Kind of like a superhero?
Maybe, you know, yeah. I mean, honestly, yeah. As someone who's not particularly familiar with superheroes, yeah. So, you know, other paintings that he did, and of course, illustrations, Saying Grace, just, you know, iconic picture of this, you know, small, frail woman praying in a public setting. One of my favorites is called Tough Call. It's this picture of umpires in the middle of a rainstorm, and they're during a baseball game. They're trying to figure out, like, is this, you know, should they call the game or not? And it's such a cool picture and has a lot of whimsy, you know, associated with it. And, you know, he didn't do a lot of heaviness in his artwork, but I think some of the things that gets more maybe attention nowadays due to the gravity, just, you know, looking back at you know, the years he lived through and the importance of that history, the pieces that get a lot of attention nowadays of Rockwell's are two that are very very beautiful, very powerful. The first one is The Problem We All Live With. It's a picture of little Ruby Bridges, a six-year-old black girl who is integrating the New Orleans public school system. So he painted this, and it's a very, very powerful picture of this precious, just defenseless little six-year-old girl who's just, you know, this small little you know, a human in her little dress, and she's got her little ribbons on for school, but she's being escorted into, you know, by all this terrible graffiti with these slurs and people throwing vegetables and all this stuff. She's being escorted by these powerful people past all this, going to her first day of school. And it's just this this powerful thing, The Problem We All Live With, was the title of that picture. And it was something that at the time was very much true. You know, it was something that regardless of what corner of the United States you lived in, this was happening on our soil. It was something that we had to get through. So
yeah, that one I want to say is actually, and I could be very wrong, but I think that one, the original, is actually in Memphis at the Civil Rights Museum there. I could be wrong. Maybe it was there for a time.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know they have done over time, they've done tours of Rockwell's work, you know, and across the United States, either as an exhibition or just to raise money for this and that. But the other one that's interesting, and of course, certainly for our location here in the heart of the Deep South, and even in the title of the work, it was called Murder in Mississippi. And this was probably Rockwell's hardest painting, one that just was gut-wrenching the most. It actually it was published in the magazine Look in the 60s, and it actually illustrates the murders of three civil rights activists in 1964. In Neshoba County, Mississippi. So if you're familiar with, you know, the civil rights movement of the 60s and 70s and aware of that, the, you know, Freedom Summer, you know, you had all these folks coming from all over the country to, you know, help the local black population here in the Deep South get registered to vote, you know, and become a part of civic life. And so there was this big push, and these two guys from New York, along with a guy from Meridian, Mississippi, were actually murdered as a part of that. It made international news, and it was this really, really big deal. And it happened literally just probably, you know, I don't know, 55 minutes from where I sit right now, you know, just right up the Highway 25 here in central Mississippi, happened in Neshoba County, which is the county seat of that area is called Philadelphia. It's a, you know, there's a kind of a Native American population up there, but it's very extremely rural. And you know, that's where this occurred. And it was just incredibly tragic, repulsive. It was just this horrifying thing that happened during this hopeful, you know, summer where folks were gathering together to, you know, change the lives for these people in the South. And so he illustrated this, and it's just horrifying. It's so sad and yet so purposeful. And, you know, you could tell that Rockwell, this sat heavy with him. And so, you know, in his work of Murder in Mississippi and then also The Problem We All Live With, you know, you can tell that this this tugged on his heartstrings quite well.
Which is really saying something, because like I said, with the war, you really didn't see him engaging with kind of more of the harsh reality. Yeah. And you almost kind of see a bit of like a, I don't know if it's just an evolution of you know, kind of you kind of juxtapose some of his civil rights work with some of his earlier work and kind of the Leave It to Beaver style Americana. And you do see kind of a kind of a coming social awareness that he must have gone through as an artist.
Coming to terms with the ugliness of it all. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, the depth there certainly grew. Anyway, Rockwell, you know, we talk about his life and work and his accomplishments and his legacy, but of course we talk about him mainly because he was a pipe smoker.
Oh, and was he ever?
He was indeed, man. He was indeed. It was, you know, the subject matter of so much of his imagery. You have the classic painting of, you know, boys smoking, these two kind of, you know, cornbread looking kids. Maybe back behind the barn, and they're smoking on their little corn cob pipes with their little pup. You know, just so fun. To the one of my favorites, the boy caught smoking a pipe, where he's you know, the kind of the older gentleman is dragging him along by his coat neck, and where he's found this pipe that he's been enjoying, and the older gentleman has this smirk on his face, like, I got you, but I really can't blame you, because what, he's smoking his pipe as well, and you know, just really, really neat. All the way to his self-portrait, to just, you know, this is someone that was very identified with his pipe, even, like I said, even in his self-portrait that he did, which was really neat. But he used it as, you know, a subject in his paintings, as, you know, a matter of, you know, as a prop, as part of his imagery. He also carefully used it to promote his own image. You know, Rockwell was, over time, he really developed this very keen sense of image and social awareness. And, you know, he was someone that was quick to, you know, make sure that, you know, he had his everything was put together before he went in public and all that. He was really...
He became a celebrity in the art world. I mean, like, that's difficult at any era. You right. know, but I mean, but like
certainly an era where, you know, you didn't have the internet or
exactly right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. It's really, really remarkable. And so he was very careful to kind of promote his image in a very specific way. And so he was known, you know, if he was ever going to be photographed, he was known, hey, wait to take your picture until I get my Dunhill. You know, I've got to go get my Dunhill for the photo. And, you know, was just careful to always curate that. That kind of picture, and the pipe for him represented the, you know, it reinforced his identity as an intellectual and as a thinker. You know, he wanted that. And, you know, what pipe smoker doesn't, you know, it's kind of part of our, all of our deals. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, Norman Rockwell, straight Dunhill smoker, someone that, loved a fine billiard. And, you know, the accounts of his tobacco preferences are varying, but over the years have come under different, you know, versions or interpretations. Recently, the Scandinavian Tobacco Group and PipesandCigars.com came out with a Norman Rockwell tobacco, and who knows if that's anything near what he smoked, but certainly it kind of, you know, in their mind evokes some of his you know, attributes and things like that. So, man, just a great American, interesting personality, someone that accomplished a lot and in the identity of our country, but also, you know, spread the news about the pipe. So,
man. Represented pipe smokers well. That's what you like to see. Man, look, I love diving into to Norman Rockwell and kind of learning more about him. And you know, it's just one of those things. You know his work, and maybe especially if you might be kind of a younger listener, a newer pipe smoker, then you know you might know the name, you might know the work, but you may not have put the two together. And so, hopefully, you got some good education and maybe a little inspiration. There is something to be said for somebody who does utilize that kind of pipe imagery in the way in which they represent themselves. Obviously, you know, you can't get a picture of John David Cole without him smoking a pipe. You can't, you know, I have been known to be photographed wearing a certain brand of hat and a certain type of hat. This is, it's, you know, kind of
the old Gorin Brothers hat. How much do they pay you a week? Yeah.
Not a dime, but I have certainly paid them a lot to promote their work. But man, but you know, I will say this, man, like there's a lot of different ways in which you can kind of go out. You can, and showcase your love of the pipe. You can bust out kind of that, you know, that beautiful Dunhill for sure. Or you can rock a good quality corncob pipes from our good friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
Man, absolutely. Another American legend and someone,
yes,
a company that was really tied up in the identity of America and, you know, the encapsulation of the American ethic and all that. The country gentleman, the legend corncob pipe, the Washington, I mean, just all these incredible incredible pipes that they came out with. We are talking about the legend today, which is such a simple but iconic pipe from Missouri Meerschaum. It's a very elegant billiard-shaped pipe. Comes in a straight and a bent variety and has just a very nice, warm, honey-colored stain on the outside of it. I like this because it has the kind of amber bit that goes with the honey color warmth of the bowl, and so you just really have this very understated but classic look. It's very nice, and you know, when you're smoking it, you might be channeling those boys smoking behind the barn with their little dog. So the Legend Corncob pipe from Missouri Meerschaum is the most popular pipe for the price in their series of mid-sized filtered pipes, and has a medium-sized bowl and a genuine hardwood insert in the bottom of the bowl. So just a very, very handsome pipe. You can get it at corncobpipe.com. It retails for only $7.79. And if you go there and order it, they'll ship it right to your front door.
Man, I love my country gentleman. I was enjoying it when I was in Grand Rapids just the other week. And so I want to encourage you guys, if you happen to have a country gentleman and you happen to be enjoying it, or a legend, be sure to enjoy it. Take a selfie when you do it. It's a great way to let the good folks at Missouri Meerschaum know you appreciate them for sponsoring the show.
Pipe question of the week.
Week. right, man. Pipe question of the week coming in from Brad.
Brad.
Brad. Let's see what Brad had to say. He said, hey, JD and Bo, big fan of the show. Been listening the past couple of years and have learned a lot. Quick question. I've been a pipe smoker for the past 2 years, which means I unfortunately missed out on the frog. For the past year, Kramer's father, Dempsey, has been my go-to daily smoke, but I recently ordered Shepherd's Pie from the Country Squire, and I absolutely love it. To my not-so-expert palate, these two tobaccos taste similar to me. Are there any other similar tobaccos that you can recommend, either possible frog replacements or just similar Latakia forward or mild blends? Thanks so much. And that's from Brad. You know, this is reminding me, and I probably should have mentioned this at the top of the show. You remember, yeah. So we mentioned Bumbo, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I had mentioned a pairing that I thought was a really good pairing was Taps VIP. Now, I realized after I got off the air, and actually that very night, I picked up my pipe and I was like, hang on now, I don't think that's right. And I sat down and smoked it. What I was actually, like, if I could do a retraction, I love Taps VIP. There's no slight to them, but actually it was Fox Bankers. Fox the Bankers. And it wasn't to go with Bumbo. It was to go with the Havana Club. It was a really, really fine pairing. Anyway, I don't know why this just reminded me of that. I mean, I think it's because I was also smoking some Frogwort alongside of it. And I really love, you know, those two are kind of like my favorite pipe tobaccos, Fox the Bankers and Frogwort Cellar. But anyway, yes. So. Back to Brad's question. I apologize for the detour. But.
Yeah, no, it is a good question. Frankly, there's just not any great replacements. We are so fortunate to have developed years ago a tobacco called Shepherd's Pie, which we're very proud of, and we didn't do that to mimic a Frogmorton per se. It just kind of came out that way. And then after McClellan closed, a lot of people started looking for alternatives, and Frogmorton Shepherd's Pie started coming up in a lot of the forums. And obviously, we were pleased with that, and we're honored by sending Shepherd's Pie across the world. And since then, a lot of folks have adopted Shepherd's Pie as their Frogmorton replacement. So, very, very honored by that. There's not a lot out there that feature the full strength Latakia with a nice soft Virginia and then unflavored Black Cavendish component. So, some tobaccos I would encourage you to try if you haven't, your pipe smoking adventures over the past couple of years, things like the Rattray's Black Mallory. You could do Dunhill's Early Morning Pipe or 965. There's so many different forms of the English style blend that kind of come out and show you what can be done with the sophisticated Latakia leaf, and even Presbyterian mixture, which is just such a fascinating blend with its kind of mystery lurking back in there. So any of Greg Peace's English blends, of course, he just does such a good job with, nuance and care when blending pipe tobacco. So, explore those. But, I think you're going to be hard-pressed to find anything quite like the frog. We're honored to occasionally be mentioned in the conversation with Shepherd's Pie. But, man, the Frogmorton, it was pretty unique.
Great question, Brad. We want to encourage anybody, if you got a pipe question for us, you can send it into the show. That is show@countrysquireradio.com. Again, that is show@countrysquireradio.com.
Quick fire with the squire.
Quick fire question.
Ow.
Did that hurt?
No, right? It did. It was painful.
All right.
Yeah.
This is appropriate. This almost seems like we planned it. I want to assure everybody, this was not planned. I know that's hard to believe. But we, of course, have been going through our March Madness, June Madness now for various tobacco brackets that we've been sent into the show. And this week, we've got the first round of our Heroes of the Bowl bracket. How about that?
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. How about that's great.
That's God's providence. That's not us, man. That just happened. All right. Here we go. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay. This is going to be tough, actually. This is going to be tough. And also, right. There's some on here that are a little questionable. All right. Walt Disney versus J.R.R. Tolkien.
I got to go with Tolkien.
Yeah.
I love Disney. Got to go with Tolkien.
All right. Brian, you know where he lives. I agree. You got to go with Tolkien. It's a tough one. Both iconic, both creators, both visionaries. But I mean, like, you can't deny the pipe culture that Tolkien established, and beyond just the fact that he enjoyed a pipe. And then also, I mean, like, while both these men are brilliant in their own various rights, I'd rather have a beer with Tolkien. all right, Charles Spurgeon or C.S. Lewis?
As a good Anglican, I have to go with C.S. Lewis, but no shade to Charles Spurgeon, because the Prince of Preachers is always welcome at my home.
Yeah, and Spurgeon was more of a cigar smoker, right?
Yeah, he was. He was. He was a pipe guy, but he was more of a cigar smoker. Matter of fact, if you go to, I forget that big Baptist seminary that's in Kansas City, they've actually got his last cigar that was halfway smoked there when he passed away. And I think it's sitting under like a glass dome or something. It's kind of something interesting that you can go look at. So, but yeah, man, I guess, you know, between the two, I'd have to grit my teeth and go with Lewis.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. That makes sense. All right. Next up, Mark Twain or William Faulkner?
William Faulkner. There again, you know, Mark Twain, pipe smoker, probably a little more identified with cigar smoking, but, you know, William Faulkner, a pipe smoker through and through, colorful character, much like Mark Twain, but, you know, a fellow Mississippian. So we'd have to maybe get together and talk turkey on that.
Yeah, I mean, there's reasons why all of these are kind of paired up, and you can see it here with Mark Twain and Faulkner. But yeah, obviously, we got to go with Faulkner for sure. All right, and then this one's also probably going to be an easy one for you. Sir Walter Raleigh or Edward Teach?
Who is Edward Teach?
Now, you might know Edward Teach better by the nomenclature he went by in his heyday, which was Blackbeard.
Oh. Well, okay. Yep. So I'm going to go with Sir Walter Raleigh. Who are you going to go with?
So that's the thing. We got to go with Sir Walter Raleigh, because if you want to talk about contributions to pipe tobacco, especially kind of the spread of pipe tobacco as a whole.
Yeah.
You know, he was, you know, now he was a sea dog and not necessarily he was a different kind of pirate, let's say, than kind of the pirates of the Golden Age. Whereas, of course, Edward Teach Blackbeard was, you know, well, he's Blackbeard. We have yet to do a Pirates and Pipe Tobacco episode on Blackbeard because, and I have searched, there is no evidence that Blackbeard was a pipe smoker. There is a lot that is tied to the imagery surrounding Blackbeard in terms of smoke. Like he typically appeared before a captain or a crew once he had taken a ship, or, you know, you want to talk about creating that iconic imagery. Blackbeard understood that. He wanted to be seen. He would light, you know, what do you call the little things that you stick in TNT and light them on fire? Though not wick, but
Yeah, the fuse. About,
yeah. The fuse. Yeah, he would get fuses and he would put that in his beard and he would light them, and it would singe the beard so that he would have this like cloud of smoke around his head and
kind
of
become
this demonic figure whenever he intimidated people. And so, you know, he was big on personal branding, if you will.
Yeah.
But so I feel like we would know if Blackbeard smoked a pipe, and I have yet to find any evidence. I swear, like, I, you know, it doesn't take much for me to justify making a pirate one of our Pirates and Pipe Tobacco features, but unfortunately, yeah, the godfather, the OG, the most recognized in pop culture anyway of the historic pirates, Edward Teach, no proof that he was a pipe smoker. So yeah, Sir Walter Raleigh gets it easy, unfortunately.
That's
all right.
Great.
This is interesting, man. I'm really excited for next week because we're going to have Tolkien going up against Lewis. We're going to have Faulkner going up on Sir Walter Raleigh. It's
I love
gonna
that
be,
you can't say the word Raleigh. It's
Raleigh.
It's whatever you want it to be. Yeah.
It's Sir Walter Raleigh smoking his Missouri Meerschaum.
Meerschaum, yeah.
Yeah. What did I say? What do you want to call it? Anyway.
Everything's fine, Bo. Everything's fine.
Absolutely. By the way, that was a fun episode when we did Sir Walter Raleigh for the Pirates of Pipe Tobacco. It's a good one to go back and listen to if you haven't already. But there you go. Those are our, the Heroes of the Bowl bracket round one. For our quick fire questions this week, we got the full brackets. All of the brackets are available to our patrons at patreon.com/countrysquireradio. So if you're interested in finding out what comes next, you can find it there. These have been a lot of fun. Our stretching out March well into June and beyond. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
Listener feedback. All right, man. Listener feedback this week. You got some listener feedback for us, right?
Well, I did. You know, we, of course, talked to friends and acquaintances after occasionally some of these episodes. And so right on the day our last Squire Select went out. I get this text message late at night. It's from our friend Russ Hicks, sometimes a guest host of Country Squire Radio. And he says, when John David pairs your drink with Autumn Evening, it means he secretly thinks your rum sucks. And so that is from Russ. He goes on to say that after the show, he cracked open a 16-year-old tin of Autumn Evening and drank some sweet rum with it. He actually said the age helped the tobacco a little bit, but surprisingly, the pairing was pretty spot on. So good job. So that was nice to hear from Russ. A couple weeks ago also, maybe this was last week actually, we had a tobacco talk episode, right, Bo? We talked about Gaywith and Hogarth tobacco, but also a GLP's tobacco. The GLP's tobacco we discussed was Abingdon. And I asked Greg, this was really neat. He was kind enough to kind of share a story about this. Greg Peace, I said, where did you get the name from? Where did that come from? And Greg is known to be he's an enthusiast of a lot of the finer things. You know, he is a very well-cultured person, but Greg Peace is a car enthusiast as well. And he says, quote, Abingdon was the home of MG cars. Of course, the great British MG car moniker. He said he's always been a fan. When I created the blend, the aromas reminded me of the unique smells of some of my old roadsters. Believe it or not, that's a good thing. The name seemed a fitting tribute and was oblique enough to amuse me. The full name of the town is, of course, Abingdon on the Thames. Just a bit too long for a tobacco blend, or maybe too pretentious for a blend name. So anyway, he just went with Abingdon, and that was kind of his tribute to his one of his favorite car loving towns. And so pretty neat. If you smoke that Abingdon and you smell those kind of smoldery, you know, pungent odors that are there, it's such an interesting tobacco. I think you'll maybe get what he's going for there. It's like that car smell, but in a good way. It's really neat. So you kind of get some of Greg's inspiration there, and we appreciate him for sharing that.
That's awesome. And I know this is ironic coming from me, but isn't it on the Thames and not the Thames?
It's the Thames.
The Thames.
Right.
Okay.
Like we would just, you know, because we're lazy, we'd cut out all the superfluous lettering and just say T-I-M-S. But, you know, they've got to put things in there that don't make sense.
Okay. All right. So all right.
Or that do make sense, but that, you know, we're too simple-minded to understand.
It's always dangerous whenever I ask about such things because I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
like this really isn't for me. I can't read it right.
As English as you are, maybe the language is not really for you, Bo.
Yeah, exactly.
Or for me either, for that matter.
No, this is very true. This is very true. All right, man. Well, hey, this is great listener feedback. I want to encourage y'all. If y'all have got some listener feedback for the show, you can always head over to iTunes and write us a review. It's a great way to support the show, and it doesn't cost you a dime to do it. But if you are willing to spend a few dimes to help out the show, head over to patreon.com/CountrySquireRadio, where you can support the show by becoming a patron and even joining the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club. Again, that is patreon.com/CountrySquireRadio. You can keep up with us throughout the week. You can follow John David at John David Cole on the Twitters and the shop at Country Squire Radio and the show at Squire Radio. But all this information and more can be found at CountrySquireRadio.com. All right. Well, man, Norman Rockwell.
Had fun. Yeah.
Such a great episode. Here's the bowl. This is, you know, whenever we're kind of combining pipes and culture, I mean, like, you know, we've got a pipe culture series, and to some extent this man embodied it, and certainly for his time and throughout a lot of different times in America. So fascinating study, and also just kind of exciting to learn a little more about a fellow brother of the Briar.
Yeah, that's right, man. That's right. I kind of feel like I need to subscribe to the Saturday Evening Post, but I probably can't afford it.
All right, man. Well, I tell you what, in the meantime, let's go have a day.
See you, brother. Thank you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.